in terms of our covenant. We almost know one another, except one honorable member was not present, but has sent somebody, that honorable member in the church. And the department has brought in a letter for today. Honorable member, can you please introduce yourself and introduce ourselves?
Oh, Kenneth Sinclair from the Northern State representing Coke.
Jerry Chen, representing
Hawthorne. I'm Robinson Lingan,
GA Eastern Cape. And I don't make accidents in
wet
weather.
My name is Johan Steinem. I'm a legal advisor for the Department of Trade and Industry.
We had some good discussions last week. We had some good deliberations last week, and we did say that in our follow-up meeting, if members have issues to raise, they will raise them. Time also doesn't permit, and you want to put something, to have something to do in a position to tell them to let the customer. We saw the deal of time and we don't know what this is. Taking into account what the organization is. So if there are members that want to raise certain issues, so that we raise them in platform to the department to engage on all those issues, we shall contact them.
Mr. T, I last week asked about the minimum facility and the lady from the gambling board helped me write this morning. She said it's called, and I've lost my paper, but it's return to play a percentage that I can't, I'm now gone through the act, and then I found there's an amendment on the act and it's not in there. And then I also need to know the percentage. I was told last week that there's a on every license and every application there's a specific amount that goes to a specific project. I want to know, on your turnover, is there not a minimum amount that must go? We must be, surely there must be a guideline or a thing that says that amount or that percentage must be spent on social development or rural development or urban development or whatever the case. Thank you, sir.
But anyone else? No, Adam, from our involvement in that order?
Yes, thank you, Chair.
Chair, I just want to find out from this department. Linked on to Honorable Van Lent's question. Why does the percentage return to player, if I'm correct? Why can't it be, or what is the department's responsibility towards social upliftment, like the National Lotteries Act, or the National Lottery Board, as far as this program of social upliftment? Why can't interactive gambling not take the same route in terms of a percentage or money forfeited or money not claimed or anything like that goes towards the social uplift? Thanks. Or, and if it is, how much percentage going towards social uplift? And thanks.
Before you, Honorable Gordon, I think Honorable Van Lingen, we are both culprits for purposes of record, your mic was not on. If you could repeat yourself and put the mic on.
No. Now I'm going to concur with Honorable Alan. But basically, I think we've got the same point. The one is that I want to know what percentage is there, a percentage or a guideline for return to player, and the same for social development as in urban or rural. Thank you.
Honorable Mbuni.
Chair, I was just making an input on the percentage or minimum amount to social development. I think as it was explained by the board last week that in the HLF project that the Sako in any other rural area or urban area, they set some conditions to say if you are going to operate in this area, perhaps we need you to finish so many schools or upgrade so many whatever housing, and then the entrepreneur who's going to run the interactive gambling then has to abide by that rule. So as far as I think percentage that is taken to for social development, or as I say, the amount, minimum amount of percentage, I think let's be a certain percentage returned on top of perhaps whatever project that particular entrepreneur or gambler is going to set up in that area. Because already there's that thing that's happening in all the casinos. for you to have this casino here, then we want you to do 1, 2, 3 for community upliftment. So I think if we put a minimum amount on top of that, in my view, on the other hand, I think it's much too much tax. Perhaps let's make the percentage. The more the gambler makes, the more he pays. But if you make a minimum amount, if he makes more money, he pays less. So if it's a percentage, the more he makes money, the more he pays.
Any other comment on our mind?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Sassan. Mine is just on even that these fees are so high. Mine is on the historical the empowerment of the ACIs and probably what mechanisms are in place to ensure that indeed people, these ACIs and the promotion of BBB. I will tell you that I know that these big companies, they use our people for fronting people. What mechanisms are in place to check that indeed people are empowered, the BBB issue is really being addressed when a person is getting a license? Because otherwise people will continue to use for fronting, and at the end of the day they get nothing. So what is it that you are using for this partner to check that?
Any other proposition?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, the question that I wanted to ask last week, that time was our greatest enemy. In terms of illegal activities, what measures has the board put in place? Because there is this thing of cloning, where, you know, guys in the IT world, they can clone anything. What measures has the board put in place in terms of that? What measures has the board put in place in terms of hackers, where these clever guys can hack into any machine? I mean, they've even hacked into a bank in the USA. They hacked into anything. Is there all the measures that the department has taken or put up there, is it sufficient enough? Is it strong enough? Will it keep? Well, there's no guarantee. I know in life there's no guarantee against anything. But for argument's sake, if we read about the fraud and the corruption now with your credit card, your banking card, and all that skimming devices, Has the department ever thought of putting measures against these things? I think I might add lastly just one issue. If the board goes for this corporate social investment project, does it consult with the local municipality that whatever it does, it talks to the IDP of that municipality? Because there's nothing that can happen that is not a priority of that particular municipality or area. We don't find a situation where the board does something which is not in the IGP of the municipality. If that hasn't been the case, how do we rectify that? Because initially the issue of service delivery, so assisting service delivery or infrastructure. Just on the thought, is it really what is on the IGP of that particular? I'm sure you can now respond, the department and the board.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and members. I'll start off with the very last questions that were raised. The others I will leave to my fellow colleagues to address. In terms of the National Gambling Act and the amendment legislation, there are measures placed to address and deal with illegal gambling activities. If you look at Section 83 of the principal legislation, it is an umbrella provision that deals with the prohibition of illegal gambling activities, and that anyone who contravenes the act commit an offense and shall be punished to, I think, 10 years imprisonment or 10 million rand. However, we have identified a few loopholes in IG specifically, more so because it is a new phenomenon. It is very unique in its own nature, and that there may be need to enhance the legislation a bit more to deal with specifics. For one, we identified such provisions or issues like software hacking, software tampering. Such issues we feel need to be specifically provided for in the Act. It's things that would, I think, go a long way towards ensuring that the measures we have are stringent enough. Issues such as credit card fraud, I think, would be dealt with within that umbrella provision that prohibits illegal activities within the Act. There is an issue that has been raised that fees are a bit exorbitant. They do seem exorbitant. However, when one considers the actual fees that are being paid by comparator industries within the gambling fraternity. You look at the casinos, you look at the horse racing activities as well. The fees are relatively at that level. And these are set at a level that we feel is reasonable. When one considers the returns that are envisaged will be generated in this industry, that should not be seen as way too high. There are mechanisms in place also to ensure that the BBBEE Act is, the content thereof is complied with. There's monitoring and compliance provisions in the Act, not only in the National Gambling Act, but also provincial gambling legislations as a whole, that make provision that BBBEE needs to be addressed. There's bid undertakings by all licensed operators that they make at inception, that is something that they will address and they will adhere to. Now, the compliance divisions within all gambling regulators departments ensure and monitor the performance against the set criterion of all the deliverables that they're supposed to adhere to on a month-to-month basis. For example, they will go to an extent of perusing and interrogating shareholder agreements. They have to ensure that when dividends are paid out, they go to the rightful persons. If dividends are not paid out timelessly, they have to provide reasons why that is not the case. But they go to that extent of ensuring that adherence is made to the letter. There is an issue that was raised about the minimum percentage return to player. These return to player percentage currently in the casino industry is set at a rate of 87% return to player percentage. And it's normally found in the technical standards that are set by the South African Bureau of Standards. It's technical standards, I think 1718, part 1 and part 2, that addresses this. And all licensed operators have to ensure that they adhere to those standards. If they're going to be offering any gambling activities, any machines that are placed on the floor in a casino, they have to ensure that the return to player is set at that rate. It's very specific. There's an issue that was raised about the community social investment, the minimum percentage that is spent on rural development. When bids are evaluated, each of the prospective licensees has to make certain undertakings depending on the nature of business that they're going to be engaging in. And with the bids that they tender, they come up with what they feel would be reasonable based on the investments that they're going to be making, the nature of the project that they're going to be making. The board does not necessarily set a specific percentage to say that they have to ensure that a specific percentage goes back to society. They have to themselves decide on the basis of the bid itself and the total investment, the capital expenditure that they're going to be expending and investing in the area, how much they would be willing to spend. And this is also taken over and made included in the conditions of license of that specific licensee once the license is granted. I remember Honorable Van Linen did indicate that she made a comparison with the 0.1% that the National Responsible Gambling Program ensures that all licensed operators contribute to one. There's no specific percentage in the case of CSI projects that they deliver. Maybe it's something that the NGB and our provincial counterparts should look into to see whether the need would be there to ensure that it is included. However, I feel also that the current BBBEE Act also addresses the very issue. As my colleague last week did indicate that while we ensure the implementation of that act, we also have to ensure that they pay back to society, and there's a specific percentage that is provided for in the BBEX that says that all entrepreneurs should ensure that they invest and pay back to society for social upliftment. The other issue that was raised related to whether or not the board does consult with municipalities to ensure that it's included in the IDPs, and if not, how it should be addressed. At national level, we do not engage them directly, but it would be the case in the provinces. I don't know if that addresses the issue fully. I would leave it to my colleagues to add on and stamp on what I said. Thank you.
I think most of the issues are done.
I think my colleague has addressed most of the issues that were raised here by the members. Like the issue of municipalities, whether they, but by the nature of IG itself, going to be regulated at national level, and as we all know that it will be on software based. So the contribution there, I think it will only depend on what the conditions of the license will be providing on the municipality development of the society. And I think, as my colleague has pointed out, the percentages are really not significant. There is another issue that was raised to whether the issue of social upliftment should not be likened to be similar to that one of the lottery administered by the National Lottery Board. But I think as my colleague has indicated, the issue of conditions in the licenses will be addressing that. And unless if it will be required that we should actually stipulate that there should be this percentage that should be contributed specifically instead of just relying on the conditions that should be placed upon. And again, the issue of hacking, that the board will also be tasked to monitor the all the operators, and they will be having a list according to the act of all the operators that will be there, also acting upon the report on what is going on. I think they are also developing their own IT. I think my colleague has touched on almost all of them.
Thank you. Okay, there's very little that I can. Thank you, Chair. Save maybe just for referring to the question that was asked in respect of illegal activities and offences. I do not think that the principal act has been made available to the members. I think that it is made. I will very, very briefly, or before I refer to this, maybe just say the following. In terms of our law, we distinguish between two kinds of offences. As we all know, the one is the so-called common law offences, like assault, bribery, and fraud, for that matter. And then we've got the so-called statutory offences, which we find in the Acts of Parliament, like we have here. The example that was given in respect of credit card fraud being committed by a person engaging in interactive gambling activities, that would purely be on the basis of common law. Such a person would be committing an act of fraud, and he or she would be liable to be prosecuted for common law fraud.
short, so we do not need a statutory offence in the Act to deal with that kind of scenario. But needless to say, in the Principal Act we have a number of statutory offences. They can be found in Section 82. All the statutory offences are listed there by way of section. So if any person would contravene any one of those provisions, he or she would then be liable for prosecution in terms of the statutory offence. Just below that is Section 83, dealing with the penalties that can be imposed for the respective offences. We can see that they are rather severe. Maximum fine of 10 million rand and or imprisonment for a period of 10 years. So there are fairly severe penalties being prescribed for the statutory offences that we find in the Principal Act. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. I'd like to know, you know, from our previous presentation on the slide number 15, which we were mentioned there, you know, the National Gambling Board may delegate some of the enforcement and complaint power to the provincial gambling board. I'd like the department to indicate to me that under what kind of circumstance would they do that, you know, and those of the enforcement and complaint power would be they just for commonly or just for temporary, you know, if they delegate those powers to. And what is the responsibility in difference between the National Gambling Board and the Provincial Gambling Board? Thanks so much. Responsibility, you know, in between of national and provincial. What is the distinction in between of that?
Thank you, Honourable Member.
If you could wait, I will add some questions. I personally feel the question that was asked by Honourable Maine was not properly addressed, because we are checking on the entry of HDIs in the industry. Now the response comes with a comparison of the fees with the casino, but it doesn't show how are HDIs going to enter the industry in relation to this fee. Any form of assistance? Oh, because very few people will enter this industry. I think it was coming from that angle, not the fees generally that they are in the, you know, quite, they talk to other sort of same industries like casino. Then I'm sure, is there any other follow-up?
We raised it last time. We asked what were the objections to the regulations. We haven't seen the objections to the regulations. The lady just mentioned a few, five or six, which I have jotted down. But surely by now there should be a list coming out with the objections so that we can see whether it's being covered in the regulation. Thank you, sir.
I'm sure that you can get some response. Okay, another one, please.
Chairperson, I'm not from China originally, but they say in China, at any given time, there's 20 million people busy with interactive gambling on the internet for any 24-hour period. So just, I mean, if you take the population and so on, it just shows you the, can I say, interest that this creates, and it's necessary to regulate it. The problem that that I just have is, it's stipulated here that it will contribute to the infrastructure development in rural areas. With due respect, I don't think it's going to do anything positive in terms of infrastructure development. Maybe it's to do with the National Gambling Act, and it's a reference from there, but this specific piece of legislation, I don't personally believe that's going to add anything. What I believe chairperson is that given the poverty levels in our society, it actually enhanced the negative effects of gambling. Some way it refers to the vulnerable. And I think there are studies that show that in economic crises like these, it's the most vulnerable that, can I say, grab to these type of opportunities and further, you know, lose out on whatever little they had and so on. So the point that I want to get to is, in terms of managing the vulnerable, I know that there's some references in this, unfortunately I wasn't here last week, but for me the most critical point is, how do you manage those vulnerable people that can or cannot be addicted and lose whatever they've got? For me this is a very critical point that I'm not so sure that the legislation is in place.
Thank you, Chair. On the issue about the delegations of powers to be delegated to provincial licensing authorities by the National Gambling Board, and the distinct responsibilities between the National Gambling Board and the provinces, I think it's critical for us to note that in terms of the Constitution that the National Gambling Board has concurrent jurisdiction with provincial licensing authorities. The responsibilities of regulation, monitoring and controlling gambling activities within the Republic. The responsibilities of the provincial licensing authorities are clearly enunciated in Section 31 of the Act, amongst which they have to ensure that all undertakings of all licensees in South Africa are issued and are carried out as promised. They also have to ensure that they collect timeously any taxes, levies, and any fees that are paid out by licensed operators. They've got inspection powers of the premises as well that operators operate from, amongst others. And they consult with the NGB from time to time on specific issues related to gambling. The National Gambling Board's responsibility is over 18 responsibility. It has the power, oversight functions, over regulation of gambling within the Republic. And to this end, they also have inspection powers over provinces as well, provincial licensing authorities, insofar as they are carrying out their activities, monitoring compliance activities within that provincial gambling board. The NGB as well, they have to evaluate the compliance monitoring of all licensees of provincial licensing authorities. In as much as the provinces would undertake that because they're hands-on the processes and dealing with operators at that level. The NGB also has to, they have that oversight function over the provinces as well to ensure that they're carrying out their functions as they're supposed to be. Delegation of powers. There's provisions in the Act that indicate what sort of powers may be delegated by the National Gambling Board to the provinces, amongst which may be the licensing powers of the provinces. national licenses, the odds by their nature to be issued by National Gambling Board. However, because initially the intention was never that the National Gambling Board should be issuing out licenses, that power was delegated to provinces to ensure that they issue such licenses and monitor them accordingly. Inspectorate powers as well. Each of the provincial licensing authorities have got inspectorate departments within which they deal with illegal gambling activities, monitoring and controlling of such. And this is one power that has also been delegated to the provincial licensing authorities. Be that as it may, the board, NGB, still has a compliance division and inspectorate. They do have inspectors in-house who work in concert with the provincial licensing inspectorate when they deal with illegal activities. I don't know if that does address the question that you raised. The issue on objections, the list of objections to see whether all of those are covered in the regulations. My colleague did indicate from the DTI at the last meeting that because the comments had just come through, they were still in the process of consolidating all the comments, and that those would be made available to members if they so wished to have those comments. I don't know how far they've gone with the process, but we can answer to that. But I think it would be ideal for them to make them available to also see whether or not they've all been incorporated and how they've been addressed. The different stakeholders will still be engaged on the comments once those have been addressed and finalized and the details formulated responses to those. The issue on the entry of HCIs in the industry, how they're going to be able to enter the market. This is an issue that I feel would be addressed in terms of the BEE code as a whole. The board is in the process of ensuring that all licensed operators and all prospective licensees, ID licensees, conform to the code totally. I believe that there is provision therein that deals specifically with ensuring that HCIs are catered for and that they benefit as well from any enterprises that may be established. This would not be unique or any different under IT. Their needs would also be catered for. I think in the same manner as HCIs have benefited in the past in entering the different industries and different markets, the same vehicles may be used as well to enter maybe in JVs or enter into agreements with or secure funding from the banks to ensure that that they're able to benefit from this industry, IT specifically. There's an issue that's been raised that in studying the legislation as a whole, there is a belief that instead of addressing the ills of gambling, that IT may in fact enhance the negative effects of gambling as a whole. That there's been studies that show that the vulnerable grab at such opportunities, more so under the current economic situation. There are specific provisions in the Act. In fact, if you look at the over-18 intention of the legislation, is to protect the vulnerable against the latent effects of gambling as a whole, the overstimulation of gambling. You will note in the principal legislation that there's provisions that specifically state and mechanisms introduced of ensuring that the vulnerable minors specifically do not engage in interactive gambling. There is a criterion that needs to be followed to ensure that they do not at all participate in gambling. For one, IG is specifically targeted at a specific section of society, people with bank accounts, with credit cards and current accounts specifically. I do not think it's every minor that can easily access that unless its own parent is irresponsible in one way or the other and makes available a password to a child. I believe there will always be that small percentage of irresponsible persons who may make that available to the vulnerable. But I don't believe that IG specifically is targeted at the poor of the poorest. It's not everyone who has access to a computer, for one. It's not all of them who have access to, or who have current accounts and credit cards. And specifically, it excludes the use of money as a medium of the payment of engaging in such activities. I don't know if that does address the issue of concern. Thank you.
Yeah, to add on what my colleague has been saying now, also to ensure that the vulnerable are protected, the provider is also required on their website that they should also have hyperlinks to responsible gambling profiles so that these people can also benefit from the counseling of advisors. And they are also required as a condition to their license to have trained personnel in their employer as IG providers to deal with issues of responsible gambling and also monitor that the manner this player is playing the game is actually becoming a overstimulated. Will end up with more money. There, also on the website, they will be pop-ups as well to remind this player that you've been playing for this long, you've actually spent this much now. Do you still want to continue? But, I mean, yeah, those are some of the measures that are already in place, and as well as the Mr. Jenkins is also up and running to assist the vulnerable actually realize that gambling can also lead to other problems they overdo. The act and regulation also provide for exclusion. The person can assess himself and say, I think I'm bad for this, I should not continue gambling, and they can register themselves as a person. That will also guide other providers. They shouldn't offer the games to such a person if it is to me. And the act goes to extend that the court order can also be obtained by the party to say this person is irresponsible gambler. He should actually stop gambling. And those are some of the measures that are in place. With regard to objections that are received by the DPR, I will also indicate, as my colleague did, that the regulations as they are presented before the committee now, they have not yet incorporated the comments that they have indicated. Some of the sore points that the comments to the objections, as objections were raised, were issues like those pop-ups as they come might be irritating to somebody with a responsible gambler. They also complain about the stringent manner of requiring registration of a player where they have to get affidavits to show that they are not minors, to show that the country they are coming from does not prohibit interactive gambling. So they find those to be too tedious and they think they are necessary. Mm-hmm. But we have not yet incorporated those into the regulation. As indicated in the previous presentation, that we also need the input from the committee that we should also incorporate with those comments that we have received into the regulation, so that we can have a regulation that will satisfy everyone. I think my colleague has touched all the things that need to be raised. And with regard to delegation to provincial gambling board, I think with regard to interactive gambling, most primarily the provinces will also be issuing certificates to key employees as a male in the IT provider. They will also be monitoring that those people do comply with the conditions of the certificate issued by the provincial board. Yeah, I think that is
just to amplify just a bit on what my fellow colleagues have said. I think what we should appreciate, generally what comes out of the comments is that there seems to be a level of over-regulation from South Africa. I think this was precipitated more of from the concerns that were raised that this seems to be opening up avenues for minors to gamble. So we had to come up with more stringent measures to ensure that it's watertight to an extent that it cannot be easily accessible to minors or the vulnerable, and to also deal with problem gambling as well. Most of the comments really feel that we're going to be stifling the economy to an extent that because of the level of compliance that we are requiring, and the nature of the documents that are going to be expected of all operators and punters to make available, that it will lead to South Africa not being seen as an attractive market, because when a person thinks they have to provide an affidavit to actually play on the internet, they would rather go to an offshore operator that just offers these activities at leisure without making any requirements from them. I think internationally what happens is that you find no checks are made at all. The only checks that are made are when a person only wins. When you win, that's when they only want verification. Outside that, anyone can play, even if they are just they're all minors. But ours is really unique, and we make sure that from inception to the end of the game, that a person who plays on the internet qualifies to be a person who qualifies as over 18 and does meet all the criteria that has been set. He touched on the issue of exclusion. It is the responsibility of the National Gambling Board to maintain national property exclusion database. That database is there. What happens with that database, you find if a person feels I've got a gambling problem, they will register on that database to say, or inform the licensee to say, I've got this problem, please make sure that I do not play. The minute that name is entered on the database, that person will be precluded from gambling anywhere in South Africa. It doesn't matter whether it's gambling at the casino, gambling on IG, or gambling on the race course, but that name will remain there and they will not be allowed whatsoever to gamble for money. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Then I'm going to proceed now.
I just want to inquire, is it envisaged in the regulations that there will be a specific number of licenses issued for South Africa? Maybe I missed it. I mean, the national gambling, I think there's 40 licenses.
Yes.
in that instance. Yeah, and then the other issue is, I've got a figure that says that the international payout percentage for casinos is around about 90%. You quoted a figure of 80-something. Yeah. What is the world norm in terms of the percentage, and is South Africa in line with that?
It was mentioned that 10 licenses were agreed in the committee that 9 of them have been given.
Oh. I'm sorry.
But there are 10.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, but then the rest you continue. But in your closing, I really do want to stress that IG is also business. Whether it comes from the front or the back, it is business. It's wanted to make profit. And you cannot look at yourself and say, hey, this one is paying too much. You know, there's a very thin line there. Mm-hmm. And you stop people saying, hey, paying more, which means you have less profit. I seriously want us to look into that. And actually admit and say that it is business. By playing, someone will get more money. That's one thing that should come clear. Secondly, I think it should be clear, even in the regulation, that whatever infrastructure is brought, Honorable Sinclair, this question was asked last week about infrastructure and whatever. Just as much as it is being said that infrastructure, I think it must be clearly said. It must talk to the ICT. I mean, IG would be administered nationally, so there's cooperative governance. You cannot say we will leave it and all that. It must be clear, because we do have this experience of things happening that are not in the ICT. And people getting, the president of the country was saying somewhere on the function, and there were bicycles that were delivered, and asked the mayor to have a look at the ICT. Found that the bicycles are not in the ICT. Even though, you know, not even in the near future, what people needed most was a road. But even in this bicycle, there were no roads. So they should be talking to the ITP. Lastly, the issue of the of HDI, it must be clear. It cannot be left to the banks and all that. It's difficult. It must be in one way or the other, just made clear, because the issue is to address the imbalance. And you cannot just leave it and say, hey, we'll try some funding and so on. Just like Ramadan. So as I wanted to just close in remarks, just to take note of that. Thanks. You can then.
Thank you,
Honorable
Chairperson. As indicated, the number of licenses will be limited to 10. And if the need arises, I think the minister can be engaged in terms of Section 87 of the Act to increase or decrease them. It is prerogative. But at this point in time, if the minister has indicated that 10 would be a reasonable amount of licenses to be issued at this juncture. The norm internationally of the return to player percentage is at 90%, between that 85% and 90%. So I think 87% was found reasonable by the technical team or technical committee responsible for coming up with the technical standards at the time. I wouldn't know the wisdom behind the 87% specifically, but that's the general practice in South Africa. Yeah. We do appreciate the concerns that have been raised, and we will take them forward and ensure that they are implemented accordingly. Thank you.
No. I think my colleague is about all that was raised here. Yeah, I think everything is up.
Honourable members and department and the board, thanks very much. We'll keep on engaging. We'll send some of the things also communicated throughout. Thanks very much. Until then, we'll meet next time. The meeting is done, okay. Thank you. The meeting with the department is adjourned. we've got our own committee meeting. I'm sure we have somebody from PMG, my apologies for not recognizing you. Okay. And the second item on our agenda is just to finalize our draft program, our committee program. You will realize that we also have copies from the other committees, because these are two committees in one. For the program of the other committee, we realize that when they are meeting on the 11th, on our second term, if they are meeting on the 11th, they are going to meet on the 12th. If they are meeting on the 26th, they are going to meet on the 25th, they are going to meet on the 26th. So, but the document, the one for economic development for us to just to reconcile with our own program of trade and development. And then our draft program. And to say to the committee that on Tuesday, Thursday, trade and industry debate, so today being Tuesday, we had no alternative but to say we're supposed to have to get a presentation from the department. So it's going to be either Friday or Monday. So we opted for the Friday. So on Friday, we're going to have a presentation from the department of trade and industry. And then on Tuesday, we're going to debate. We have a budget debate on trade and industry. It will also include, because it is a class, it will also include tourism, but that department is still being finalized. So on Tuesday, on the 30th, we're going to have a debate on agriculture, land affairs, water affairs, and forestry in the morning at 10 a.m. Then in the afternoon, at 14 hours, we're going to have environmental affairs and tourism, budget 25, trade and industry, budget number 22, provincial and local government. So our committee will be debating at 2 on Tuesday. But That is why the number 26 to see on the draft program is to get this briefing about the budget. We have no any other day, the minister, deputy minister overseas, they're coming back Saturday, but then our deputy minister will be there on Friday and the DG to brief us. So that is our, you'll see in the second page that we still didn't put the date. It was because we wanted to reconcile with the other committee, so that we take the data that follows that committee. So the secretary of the committee will actually fill in proper dates and then give also the draft to the members. And would also put in some items on oversight when the oversight period comes and any other. That it is in the program that will be going to the DTI campus for our constituency. So I'll give this opportunity now to members to make some contributions, comments, and suggestions on this program. It is draft, it is not right.
Chair, I just see there the second term. The first one is briefing by the Department of Tourism, which is right. But the second one, briefing by the Department of International Relations. I don't understand that cooperative governance. Is that not supposed to be there?
Grammatical corporation, not cooperative government.
Yes. Then, Chair, with your permission, the other issue that you know it's very much prevalent at the moment is the issue about the hearings of the National Energy Regulator. And I don't know if I'm missing it, but I see on the 1st of September only. Now, that's a very long time from now.
But then that's not the committee. That is the Economic Development, Honorable Adams Committee.
Oh, it's mine.
That gave you this program just to reconcile.
Okay.
Just to say, if they are meeting on the 11th, meet on the 12th on Wednesday. Our meeting days are going to be Wednesday at 7
yeah.
in that and international relations. Yeah. Then economic development every Tuesday.
Okay.
So this is just for information.
Yeah. Okay, now I was confused. Thank you.
Friday morning, we definitely have a meeting at 10 o'clock. If that is correct, I want to send them our apologies. I've got to go to Port Elizabeth for chemotherapy, and I won't be able to make it. I'm sorry.
That's fine. I'm sure you can tell that the normal process. And not to Honourable Adams. And just to stress to members that this is a draft, eh? It might change even today, even tomorrow. It might change. Honourable Adams.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I wonder, I see here department briefing by the department. Tourism Department, International Relations Department, or TTI, Trade and Industry. But I think at one stage, Chair, we should ask the Minister to come and share with us the strategic goals and plans with the committee as such. Because there's a lot of rumblings going on, the splitting of departments, and the TTI will have to split in terms of giving up of the, or I don't know what, going to be agreed of the stuff related to economic development. You know, tourism is now on its own, but there's overlapping working things with environment and those type of things. So trade and or international relations, the old foreign affairs. So I think it's just good, also a good working relationship with the ministries and departments, if the ministers can also just show face to the committee and introduce them and be introduced to the committee as well. That would also be great. Maybe Secretary and myself can have a look around that issue as well.
I'm sure this is correct. Another contribution. Yes, another.
Chair, thank you. I think our briefing by the Department of Tourism will be very crucial. Tourism is also a big contributor towards the GDP, and getting ready for 2010, as has now been the case that we have found out with the Confederation Cup, that there's not much space. There's a whole lot of logistical things that did not take place, for argument's sake. Beer ran out of Durban on Saturday night. In Bloemfontein, when we were there with our oversight working our committee, we also heard that there was not enough sleeping space, bedding and all that. So I think it's very good if we as a committee also find out from tourism what have they done or what are they doing towards gearing up for 2010, as well as gearing up the tourism outlook in terms of the GDP and contribution, because tourism could be one of the key elements also, or one of the key elements in terms of bringing GDP to the country. So I would suggest that if possible, Chair, if we can just after the recess have a meeting with the Department of Tourism. Also, Chair, I know it's not bearing on this committee, but I've asked the Secretary of the other committee to have a look with the department, because most of the departments, when they do their strategic planning, overall planning with the various branches of the department, they invite the committees also to those meetings. So I wonder if we can't have maybe the same approach here, where the secretary can find out with the email also, PLOs of the department, find out whether they have the strategic briefings or sessions, workshops with the department, if the committee should also take part in that. Thanks, Chair.
That is fine. That is correct also. I'm sure that is why we have the Department of Tourism as the first item. But then we're going to have the annual policy debate until the 8th of July. So definitely it will be the second time. That is tourism. Not only and then there were no flights. All these things. So it was a good test, you know, for us for 2010. There were no flights, you know, there's no accommodation, and it's only the lion. And we're not talking about the whole one. So definitely on tourism we want to move very quickly, but in our second time.
Mr. Mr. Chair, yes. I'm not sure whether this is the right place not to mention it, but I've got serious problems with the program that the Department of Trade and Industry has. Last year they got 820 million euros to use in tourism development issues, bed and breakfasts, extensions, and so on. And we don't know how that money was spent in tourism. I don't know whether we must ask a question in the MCLT about it, or whether we're going to be addressed here. Now, I believe that there's another date now, which is the 15th of September, where they open up for small submissions, just brief submissions, and then you put the full package in by November. I don't know how much money is involved there. But are we, you know, you always talk about entry level for the market. Do we know about these programs? And it's run by the Department of Trade and Industry. So, and it specifically applicable to tourism. So we must find out what's happening there.
Call it honorable member, but I'm sure that is why we're going to the department and the services came to the services. Because we'll engage the department on August, July. This program will say the department already had a DTI came back in Tutorial. That would have all the stakeholders of DTI, all the agencies, will be in a position then to engage. It is quite important that we go there so that we have all the information, so that we meet them face to face and ask them certain questions, so that when we come back, then I think we'll be well armed in September and also assisting our community with the information that we get.
Can I just make a request that you said that this is a draft program, but given the fact that that date for the 22nd, 23rd is in the constituency hearing, can we assume that that's a fixed date?
I think so, we can assume. We recall, saying in the last term, we went there when it was the constituency hearing.
Okay.
And we did say that we'll ask honorable members to throw in some suggestions. It's good that Honorable Adams has mentioned tourism, and that we all agree. And we also want to reconcile it with even transformation in tourism.
Yeah.
Tourism is still in the hands of few. The majority haven't entered that market. And the areas where we need to identify and also visit and see how, you know, the previous disadvantages are entering the kingdom. So members will be free to throw in ideas. Provinces where they come from, where they know that we can do some oversight there on tourism agents to see how we will work on our adults.
That's it. To let members be your same chair. We should also get we should also call the provinces to appear before the committee, the MEC, because each province is now a dedicated MEC for tourism, coupled with maybe environment or economic development. But I think we should also call them because to find out how ready are the provinces in terms of the tourism. How ready are the provinces in terms of, because we're not focusing 2010. We must now look beyond 2010. And that is the thing. So 2010 will come and go, and then it could be that the disadvantage will be more disadvantage than before 2010. So we must look at
what is the tourism sector doing in terms of sustaining those disadvantaged people that are taken now to be in the industry? How can they sustain that industry? So we should also look at the province, the province's terms, things of tourism. Also, in terms of, I know DTI is one of the sectors that has been identified by the President and the Cabinet as one of the job creation sectors with economic development. So I think we should also, the DTI can explain to us what are they planning, what are they envisaging in terms of getting to that benchmark of 4 million jobs, getting to the benchmark now of the 500,000 jobs. What are their contributions going to be in getting and reaching that goal?
Thanks. Raj, before you, I'm sure you'll help us on some documentation from CTI in both regards to tourism, if you could get all the physical research to tourism, funding, and marketing, DE, and all this. Honorable Sinclair?
Yeah. I just want to, what's his name? It's 4.5 million jobs, not 4 million jobs. Because I'm monitoring that 500,000 before the end of the year. But I want to add on to the Honourable Adam. I think it's such an important proposal that he's making, that we have this interactive engagement with the provinces, but also with SALDA, and maybe put aside one day where we as a committee call those entities, the 9 MECs and representatives from SALDA, to come and present to this committee what is their plans in terms of the rollout and addressing the issues that seems to be problematic in hosting a successful 2010.
Sir, I know that Honourable Sinclair is mentioning SALGA. I was in a cooperative governance meeting standing in for some colleagues where I'm an alternate, and it was quite interesting to see how that committee was objecting to SALGA's participation in the NCLP generally. So maybe we must seriously think of how we engage them and what, because they've got 10 seats, they don't appear, they don't do what they have to do, they've got budgets that don't work and so on. How do we as a committee experience them and what role do they play with us? That's the question.
As you correctly say, SALGA are members of the NCLP. I'm sure we would need to invite the meeting, to invite the department to also have, so they would shed some light on some of the issues. But in principle, they're supposed to be the NCP, it's time to see. But that doesn't happen. But we'll take it forward.
I think it's important that we must just differentiate between the activities of SALGA and the provinces in the NCOP. They've got a formal committee sitting right in the NCOP,
yeah.
But in the committees, my understanding is a bit of a different cup of tea. We can call them as committee to appear before us, but they don't necessarily have a sitting right here. They've only got a sitting right when they're out, the Council of Provinces formally. I think that's the differentiation.
No, that's fine. That is why we'll call them when we have a meeting. More especially if we're dealing with issues that cross-cut. Municipality, province, and municipality national. Even this IG, now affecting municipalities, it's supposed to be located somewhere in the municipality. So we'll call them. So the secretary will know that. Next time we'll call them. So we'll put it in the program. That is why we say we'll keep on submitting the proof until it is final. No further comments?
Mm-hmm.
If there's no further comments, now this meeting is officially now adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll meet on Friday, yeah?
You know what, this is the most important thing that you would like to get with you, remember?